That happened last Friday, and yesterday, Will Perdue went on 670 The Score in Chicago to explain a little bit of what happened with our interview. We thought we were talking to Bill Wennington, former Bull, and obviously Will said, I go by Will. So we thought we had Bill Wennington, when in fact it was Will Perdue, who joins us in the Fast Lane. Chris Ronchi, Brad Thompson, Randy Carricker, and Will Perdue is with us on the Braun and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. Thanks for being such a great sport.
Well, I told Billy afterwards, I said, dude, I could have gone off the deep end, man, and you would have looked like a total jerk, but I decided to keep it above board, and nobody would have known the better, except they would have been, man, that Bill Wennington guy, man, he's out there. But I've known Billy long enough, we spent enough time together, I said, I think I represented you well.
You really did. And Will, when we were texting back and forth, when Ronj was saying that a mistake was made, I was saying, wait, he said he went to St. John's. I said, he played it perfectly.
Well, luckily, like I said, it was a teammate that I spent plenty of time with on the road, so I knew a lot about him. And I told him, I said, I could have told some really bad stories about you and I, but I elected not to.
The fact that you kept it up the entire interview makes me so happy. I mean, you're my new favorite guest, whether you want to come on as yourself or if you would like to come on as your alter ego. Either way, you're great. Hey, there had to be a time during that. Did you think at all, after we introduced Will Wennington, did you think about letting us off the hook, or did you know that you were going to do the entire interview as your teammate?
I really didn't know which direction I was going to go, but the main thing I wanted to do was make sure that nobody got fired. But I also didn't want to, once you guys introduced me, that's when I knew that I was going to continue to go on as Bill, but I also wasn't going to correct you and say, oh, I go by Bill, because I had already told you I went by Will. So I said, listen, I don't want to make these guys feel bad nor look bad, so let's just roll with it and see where it goes. Luckily, you didn't ask too many really personal questions.
That was incredibly thoughtful of you.
Yeah, thanks so much. See, this the confusion, I don't know how much of the story you've actually heard. I know that that Shane, who is the person I set this up with at The Score, he probably told you a little bit about it. But it was a miscommunication that he had with me, because the following day, he had actually given me Bill Wennington's number. And so I texted it in the morning, and I said, thank you for coming on with us, because I didn't realize that Shane had talked to you instead.
Right.
So I said to Shane later in the day, I haven't heard back from him, so I don't know what's going on. And then I said, have you heard from William? At one point, and he had just talked to you, so then he thought, oh yeah, let me go get Will Perdue. Like, that's, I guess that's how that happened.
Yeah, because we were actually setting up for me to co-host the show on The Score for yesterday during that time frame, because that was Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Thursday when we were setting it up or whatever, and he was the one that was going to help me set up the app and all this stuff, and that's when he kind of reached out to me. So he was doing about 12 things at once, and when you said William, he was like, oh, Will, and I think we were actually on the phone or texting back and forth, and so then all of a sudden that switch got flipped, and Bill was then out of the picture, and it ended up being me. But listen, I've told people this for years, you know, when Bill and I played together that time in Chicago, I said, you have to always have a beard. He goes, why? I said, well, people can't tell us apart as it is, but at least if you wear a beard and I don't, or you wear some sort of facial hair, at least they can use that as identification. And then I joked, I said, well, right now like most men, I'm wearing a COVID beard, but how the hell would anybody know? Because it's stay in place. They can't possibly have thought I was Bill Wennington walking down the street.
Hey, Will, it was interesting. On Friday, during the interview, people were texting into us saying, this is Will Perdue. I can hear Will Perdue's voice. And our producer was, and they were calling us idiots, and our producer saying, no, it's Bill Wennington. Apologize to us. This is Bill Wennington. This is not Will Perdue.
Well, that's why I don't understand how back in the day, you know, before caller ID, you used to be able to do prank calls. 'Cause, I mean, nine times out of ten, can't you identify somebody's voice or something about that person that you can identify just on the phone? And somebody says, "Oh, they pranked me. I didn't know it was so." Come on.
And that was when I felt the dumbest, is because right before the interview started and you had texted me back and said, "Hey, I go by Will," in my head, I'm thinking, "Oh, really? Like, when did this happen?" I just thought that maybe, you know, you went your whole playing career, and then at some point you decided, you know, Bill Wennington decided he was going to go by Will, and I had been in Chicago like 14 years, and I had never heard anybody refer to him as Will, and I go, "What did I miss? Was I not paying attention?" So then I started to feel like an idiot. Yeah, and then I told my co-hosts, I said, "Hey, he's going by Will now, apparently." So just go with that.
Nobody knew, but, you know, it's my alter ego, Will Wennington. I went out and bought a red sports car and was having a midlife crisis and decided to go by Will instead of Bill.
Oh, man.
People. Hey, did you have any thought of having Bill do this interview today?
No, I should have, though.
It would have been funny.
I was expecting that.
That would have been good, because then all your listeners would have been texting in and go, "You idiot!"
Exactly.
Bill.
So, hey, Will, what did you think of the start of the documentary on Sunday night?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. You know, and I tell people, you know, and I might have said this as my alter ego, you know, Bill Wennington. There's so much that was going on during those 6 years. And I kind of like, you know, when I actually, as Will, you guys obviously saw Bill was part of the first two series being interviewed down in his basement. That, you know, I was also interviewed back in February of 19 for over 2 hours. So I don't even know if I'm going to make it in there. Did I end up on the cutting room floor? You know, I'm not sure, but I do have, they kind of go back and talk about some of the stuff that happened during the first three-peat. So, you know, we'll wait and see, but I like how they did it. I like how they kind of set it up for the next eight episodes. You know, the only thing I didn't like and is unfortunate was, you know, they made Jerry Krause out to be a really bad guy. And, you know, some of the stuff I saw on Twitter was not very favorable. It wasn't very nice. You know, unfortunately, Jerry's passed away and he can't defend himself. But, you know, I thought that they didn't do him justice by how they kind of portrayed him. Yeah, he brought a lot of negative publicity on himself, but not to that extent to where I thought he was villainized a little bit in those first two episodes.
Well, I'm sure that not everybody's experience is the same, but it did make it out in the documentary, at least the first couple of episodes thus far, is that the players' relationship, or certain players, MJ's or Scotty's, the relationship with Jerry was a bad one, almost one where it just seemed like they were sniping at each other left and right. I mean, what were your experiences with him?
I mean, a lot of that was going on during the first three-peat, 91, 92, 93, but not necessarily to that level. At some point in there, I don't know where. You know, once I got traded for Dennis, I was removed from the equation. That it kind of, from friendly banter till it got personal. You know, it got personal somewhere. And, you know, honestly, Phil, you know, and this is Phil being Phil. I mean, he recognized that. He saw that. He used that to his advantage. He helped, you know, develop some of that divide between him and the players and Jerry, but, you know, that's just kind of the route it went. And I think part of that was just, unfortunately for Jerry Krause, was because that, you know, he didn't feel like, for whatever reason, and, you know, like I say, somewhere things change, because in the early 90s, when we won the first three championships, he would always say, and I believed him, he's like, "Listen, I don't give a you-know-what about what people think about me. As long as we win championships, that means I'm doing my job. And Jerry," meaning Jerry Reinsdorf, "appreciates me." But at some point in that whole equation, you know, his opinion changed a little bit, and I think he didn't appreciate all the credit that Phil was getting. And I think he also didn't appreciate how Phil was manipulating the media. Because remember, back then, there wasn't social media. You got all your information from newspapers and radio shows, but it was also everything was delayed 24 hours. And I just don't think he, you know, felt that he was getting the credit he deserved because it, you know, it became so big. And as I was talking to you guys last week, you know, about how it wasn't just about the Beatles, it was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones combined. And yet, for some reason, he ended up being on the outside looking in when it came to receiving credit and recognition.
Well, of the four championships you were a part of, and you were with the Spurs for one of them, you had said before that one of the two most satisfying was that very first one. And is that because of the way things looked for the team in the years leading up to it? Why was that one in particular the most satisfying for you?
Because it was the first one for the organization, but also as a young guy. You know, there were the relationships I had made with some of the veterans, most notably John Paxson and Bill Cartwright, for those guys to win their championships as well. You know, one of the things that people don't realize is if you do your homework, I mean, Bill Cartwright was one of the better players coming out of college. That guy was on, you know, even though he went to San Francisco, that guy was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And not in a team photo aspect, as an individual. And he was a really good player. But unfortunately, he went to New York, where Hubie Brown doesn't necessarily believe in playing rookies a lot of minutes, so he had to take his lumps. But also, you know, he got hurt, and then they also brought in Patrick Ewing. So unfortunately, things did not really work out for him as he kind of had thought, with the praise that he was getting in and as high as he was drafted coming into New York, and also that market, which is just ruthless on athletes. And, you know, it was the trade that year that moved him up in the draft, but they traded Oakley for him in the 11th pick. They used me for the 11th pick, but considering everything he went through, you know, obviously everybody knows about Michael Jordan grasping the trophy and crying and his dad in the photo. I mean, Bill Cartwright was crying because of everything he's been through. And John Paxson. Paxson tries to claim he wasn't crying. He was just weeping with joy. But I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, but it was just, I'm a young guy. You know, it's my second, you know, my third year in the league. And I'm just like, man, we're winning championships. And these guys had already been in the league 10, 11, 12 years and finally reaching the pinnacle. That was a cool experience because I really hadn't even really got my feet wet in the league. And here we are, and no other than Hollywood winning our first championship and just watching the emotion of these guys, just who you thought were tough guys, you know, badasses, just crying like babies. And you're just like, what is wrong with you guys? And it's just all the years of just the effort and the pain and rejection and the commitment to realize that you finally got what you were searching for, what you were playing for.
And you were there, so basically the shift happens because it had been, you know, the storied franchises are the Lakers and the Knicks and the Celtics, and those are the teams that everybody talks about, and suddenly it's the Bulls. They are in that mix. What did that feel like to be a part of that?
Well, that was awesome because you were like, yeah. And also, you got to remember, you know, like anything, where you guys are, I mean, it's all about the Cardinals. You know, and I was very fortunate to go to the World Series the year, you know, the old Cardinal Stadium, the last year of the Cardinal Stadium, when you guys were in the World Series against the Boston Red Sox, you know, even though it didn't turn out very well, you know, I still got to go, and I just saw the way that people, you know, love the Cardinals. And we came from Chicago, which was a sports town, but it was a Bears town. Even though the Bears Super Bowl was back in 85, there were no other championships since then, you know? And it was still considered a Bears town. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, it's still a Bears town, but now, you know, we're in the same neighborhood as the Bears. And it's still a Bears town now in 2020. because everybody knows the power of the NFL, but it kind of changed the outlook of the organization, but it also changed how people looked at us. I mean, I talk about to this day, I mean, it happens weekly, regularly. You know, I live in the West Loop in the city. I'll run into somebody at the grocery store, you know, on the sidewalk, and they'll stop. And they'll be like, oh, I was at this. I was at the old stadium. They'll pull a ticket from 1989, 1990, 91 that they've been carrying around, you know, for all this time just to prove, hey, I was there. I know you hear people talk about I was there, but look, I was there. And not only is it a ticket, but it's an SRO ticket. Plastered up against the wall down on the third balcony, but they're so proud if they were there and they were part of it.
That's awesome. Will Perdue, we appreciate you coming back on, as Will Perdue this time, and we love your insight and input on the Bulls and on the documentary Last Dance, and as this thing unfolds, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really interesting, and hopefully we'll be able to do it one more time.
Well, I think the next time we'll just have to call in, and you'll have to determine exactly who it is that's calling.
We'll do it.
We deserve that, Will.
Sounds great. Hey, be safe and have a great afternoon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you later. That is Will Perdue, former Bull and Bulls broadcaster, now with us on 101 ESPN. Guys, before we get to the six-pack, Jay Glazer reporting that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are close to getting Rob Gronkowski. Gronk tells Jay Glazer the Bucs are waiting on word on a physical, which has already been taken. He still has things to iron out, but it should be good within 24 hours. And so the Bucs have to trade for him, but apparently the Bucs are going to get Gronk to go with Brady.
And Adam Schefter says it will be pending a physical. It'll be Gronk and a 7th-round pick to the Bucs for a 4th-round pick, according to, again.
Damn.
According to Schefter.
That's
hey,
pretty cool.
Hey, Glazer, that's a huge story.
Yeah.
See, there you go. That is a big story. Thank you, Jay.
He wasted his good goodbye.
You're right. He's like, guys, I got huge news, everybody. What is it? One of the players is sick. Okay.
Amazing.
Who is it again? This is a big story, Jay. Very good.
Coming up in the Fast Lane, get your text into the Air Comfort Service text line 65780. The Sports Six Pack is coming your way on 101 ESPN.